So the principles of ultrasound are long established, and ultrasound was developed out of technology that came about during World War II, and it's principally based on the same technique in terms of radar or sonar, where a sound wave is transmitted and sent out, and that sound wave is reflected by an object or a structure or an item, and those sound waves are returned back to the source and are then received by effectively a microphone that listens to the returning sound. And from that returning signal, you can start to build up a picture. And the reason we put the word ultra in front of it just reminds us that the frequency of the sound waves used is extremely high frequency, and this isn't sound that we can hear, this isn't a noise that we can hear as humans, but it's a noise that sits at around between 3 and 5 megahertz, so extremely high frequency, and is generated by crystals, which are located in the end of a probe, and they are stimulated to resonate through passing electrical current through the crystals. The high-frequency sound is transmitted and radiates from the probe in a very controlled manner and travels through tissue, travels through blood, travels through the heart, and is reflected back by any structure in the heart where there is an interface between fluid and solid tissue, such as muscle or tendons or valves. Same probe that transmits the sound receives the sound, and through some quite powerful computer processing, those reflected sound waves are turned into usually a black and white image that we see on a screen, and those images are built up many, many times a second to produce a moving image, a movie image of the heart. And it's the same technology that we use in scanning babies for pregnant ladies. It's no different, but again, we're just using it to look at the heart. So ultrasound works best when we have tissue or structures that transmit the sound waves clearly without any barrier or interruption. And the enemy, if you like, of ultrasound is air, and the thing that we have to work around and struggle to overcome is avoiding use any air between the probe and the principal structure we're trying to image. So in the real world, that causes two concerns. One is that there is no air between the probe and the skin, and that's why you'll know that we use jelly to cover the probe. And the second source of air that we commonly encounter is the patient's own lungs. Our lungs are full of air, and if you put an ultrasound probe over somebody's lung, you won't see anything at all. So the first skill that you have to develop when you're learning echo is how you can position the probe to avoid the patient's lungs and allow you to develop a window between the ribs on the chest that allow you to get a very clear view of the heart uninterrupted by any other structures like air from the lungs or potentially the stomach or sometimes the bowel if you're imaging through the abdominal wall, because if air is in the way, you really won't see anything at all. The importance of ultrasound in cardiology is clear in the sense that actually it's the most fundamental technique we use to evaluate someone's heart function, and almost every patient who comes up to our clinic to meet a cardiologist and have their heart evaluated comes in as emergency with heart problems such as chest pain or a heart rhythm disturbance or a heart attack will have an ultrasound of their heart performed during that visit. And the reason for that really is that it's extremely straightforward. There are no risks associated with the procedure at all. It's painless, and we can repeat it as many times as we want. And that's very different to some of the other techniques that we use in cardiology, where we might use radiation, for example, or an MRI scan, which are much more restricted and cumbersome techniques. So the majority of the imaging we undertake with echo is basic two-dimensional ultrasound. By that I mean we see a thin slice of the heart, we see a moving image in black and white, and we can see the heart muscle and the structures of the heart moving in real time on the screen. In traditional 2D echo, we don't see the blood appears black, and our primary interest is in the solid structures of the heart, the muscle, the valves, and the tendons and the arteries. However, the moving blood also reflects sound, and by changing the settings on the machine, we can then start to identify blood flow within the heart. And that's based on a principle called Doppler, where the reflected sound waves are used to determine both the direction blood is moving in and also the speed blood is moving in. Because if we know how fast blood is travelling and in which direction, it starts to give us very important information about how well the heart is working, because the primary role of the heart is to pump blood, how well the valves of the heart are working, and whether blood can flow through the heart normally, whether there's any restriction to blood flow, or whether there's any abnormal blood flow because of a valve malfunction, and also whether there are any other abnormalities that we are familiar with, such as a hole in the heart, where there's a gap in the dividing wall between two chambers, and blood is able to flow through that hole, where in reality it shouldn't be able to travel. And it's with colour Doppler, the way we can see the blood flow, that we start to get a more complete understanding of the heart. More recently, a technology which has been labelled as three-dimensional echo has been developed. Now, it's not truly three-dimensional in that the images we work with are two-dimensional images on a screen. The difference is that rather than seeing a single thin slice of the heart, we're now taking a much wider field of view and a broader angle of imaging. So rather than, again, seeing one thin slice, we're starting to see a cone of information. And that allows us to start to be able to see important structures of the heart in one picture. This technology probably has its most important role in looking at heart valve problems, and by using 3D echo we can now, for example, see the mitral valve of the heart as a whole structure rather than a series of individual slices, allowing us to look down on the valve, recreate the sort of picture our surgeon will be able to see when they're operating, and that helps us in understanding the underlying pathology and then going on to think about what sort of treatments are required. So the workhorse of echo is the transthoracic echocardiogram. That's an echo performed via the thorax, via the chest, where the probe is put on the patient's chest and pictures of the heart are taken. In some patients, it's difficult to get clear pictures by imaging through the chest wall. And in some patients, we have to take an alternative view of the heart. So rather than imaging the heart from outside, we image the heart from the patient's esophagus or gullet, and that's done by passing a probe through the mouth and down into the food pipe to sit directly behind the heart, and that gives exceptionally clear pictures of the heart and the heart valves, because the esophagus runs directly behind the heart and therefore there's nothing else in between the probe and the heart. The second thing we recognize is that many patients who have heart problems or symptoms that might reflect a heart problem develop those symptoms during effort or exercise, and very rarely have symptoms when they're lying still. If we base our understanding and our evaluation on images obtained with the patient lying still, we may miss dynamic changes in the heart and dynamic pathology. So another category of echo is called stress echo, and that reflects the fact that we take pictures with the patient resting, and then immediately compare those with pictures obtained with the heart under exercise or under stress to make the heart perform as it would if the patient could exercise to the point where their symptoms occur. Now, that stress can be in the form of exercise, and patients can pedal on a specialized bicycle whilst lying still on a couch, or they could exercise on a treadmill, or we can use a drug that's infused into a vein that fools the heart into thinking the patient's exercising, and the heart speeds up and accelerates and pumps harder, just as it would if the patient was walking on a treadmill, but the patient continues to lie on the couch, and we can therefore immediately start to monitor the heart function both on exercise and at rest and look for any changes. This is a particularly important test to look for coronary artery disease, where there's a restriction to blood flow to the heart muscle, which will not show up at rest, but will become obvious when the patient exercises and the heart is asked to work harder. There are also further additional types of echo imaging, and we can also now perform echo internally from inside the heart, where a very small miniaturized probe is passed from one of the veins easily accessed at the top of the leg and is passed up into the heart, and the ultrasound probe itself sits inside the patient's heart and takes pictures within the heart. And of course, as you might expect, this gives us the best quality pictures, because now there is nothing at all between our probe and the heart muscle, and we are in direct contact with the heart and get very clear pictures. With advances in device technology, we can now also, again via the same vein at the top of the leg, pass a very thin flexible tube into the heart and deploy a specialist plug which sits within the hole that we've found with our echo probe, therefore sealing the hole. And again, that's done with the patient wide awake, lying still on the table with just a small amount of local anesthetic at the top of the leg. The procedure takes around 30 minutes. At the end of the procedure, the tubes and the echo probe are removed. The vein is compressed gently for a few minutes until bleeding has stopped, and the patient's able to go home a few hours later. So these various different types of echo have actually been in use for some time. Basic 2D transthoracic echo has been in use since the late 50s and became popular and widespread in the early 70s. The first explorations into transesophageal echo were performed around the same time, and actually the probe technology was again developed in around the 70s and has been in use ever since. Imaging from within the heart, which is termed intracardiac echo, is a more recent development, and the miniaturization technology allowing that to be undertaken has been in use since around 2000 and has taken some time to gain widespread adoption because it is a more complex and difficult technique. Echo is only one tool that we have to examine patients' hearts, and it's the one we use most commonly, but there is some information that we can't obtain with an echocardiogram, and we have to use additional diagnostic tools. These include coronary CT, so that's a CT scan, which is effectively an advanced form of X-ray, where by using radiation we can take very detailed pictures of the entire heart, and that can give us information over the heart structure, the arteries, the coronary arteries and the veins of the heart, which are difficult to see with echo. Another important technique we use frequently is MRI scanning of the heart. This is a technique based around very powerful magnetic fields, which alter the way hydrogen atoms within our body sit. And then again, by understanding how that changes in reaction to the magnetic field, you can generate pictures of the heart. The primary advantage of MRI scan is it gives us more information about heart muscle and can tell us whether there is normal muscle tissue, whether there is scar formation, and whether there's any swelling of the heart muscle, and also allows us to very accurately measure the size of the heart and the absolute function of the heart, which, although you can do this with echo in the majority of patients, isn't possible in all patients. Echo is a fundamental skill for anyone wanting to assess and evaluate heart function. And although at first principles it seems to be quite a straightforward technique, you pick up the probe, put some jelly on the probe and put the probe on the patient's chest, it is in fact quite a complicated skill to learn. And for most people it will take between 2 and 3 years of fairly continual practice, learning and education to become a skilled echocardiographer. That means in effect taking pictures of around 2,000 patients to allow you to see sufficient range of both normal hearts and abnormal hearts, and develop the skills required to perform the technique.